The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, happy pre-eclipse Thursday or Saturday or whenever you're listening to the show. Jim Emmon Jr. is here with me. It is the question and answer show. And Jimmy, we were just talking as we walked in the studio that the forecast for the weekend looks promising.
It actually really does. There's supposed to be a little bit of forecast or a little bit of cloudiness in the morning, and then mid 70s, low 70s Monday afternoon. I read on USA Today earlier that because of the forecast, Indiana and especially our area is now one of the prime spots. So you may see 258,000 of your closest friends in Monroe County this weekend.
You might. You know, last week I was talking about the Y2K moment where it's way overblown, but you know, honestly, with that kind of weather forecast, and the reality of it is everyone's shutting down in town. Schools are shutting down. We have banks shutting down. We're going to be shutting down the afternoon. Katie barred the door, as I used to say, down south. So anyway, we'll just see how it all shakes out. I'm going to enjoy it from Lake Lemon.
Yep.
From my Tri-Tune out there. And Misty said that we have a full boat now, and actually to the point where we're having a friend of mine launch his boat tomorrow night. So there's going to be about 20 of us out on the water at Lake Lemon on Monday afternoon. So
me and about 15 neighbors are splitting some barbecue and watching it from the cul-de-sac and just laying low. We're not getting out in the traffic.
We'll see.
We'll see. That's the thing.
We'll see how it goes. All right, we do have the question and answer show today. Lots of questions. In fact, so many we probably will spill it over into the next Q&A program. So let's do a little reflection of last week, brought to you by Kenny Bland Auctions. They're your full-service auction service. He currently has my golf cart, which I think he's going to clean up and sell it. So if you have a gas-powered golf cart need, go to KennyBlandAuctions.com soon. And you may be able to buy a David Hayes-driven, wrecked many times by teenager golf cart. No warranty included. All right, Lance Lyke and the Lyke Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call my buddy Lance at the Lyke Law Group, 812-323-8300. So last week, stocks were narrowly higher for the week as folks digested mixed economic news about consumer confidence. All three major indices did post gains for the end of Q1. Now we're in Q2. Markets slipped for the first half of the four-day trading week as they took a breather after prior week's gain. Conflicting economic news on Monday and Tuesday contributed to the slide. New home sales in February slipped 0.3% over the prior month, but increased almost 6% from the year prior. People are finally digesting those higher mortgage rates, although mortgage rates are starting to come down. I saw the 10-year Treasury at 4.2, which, you know, typically 2 to 3 points over that is about where the 30-year falls. So call it, you know, I mean, in this environment, I would say probably in that low 7 range is what I would expect. I haven't looked, but that's just a guess. Durable good orders. This is everything from washing machines to helicopters and refrigerators, which we just bought one today, I understood. I'm literally driving into the station. My wife's like, you know that one refrigerator went bad. It had the bad turkey in it. I'm like, yeah. Anyway, new fridge on the way tomorrow. We'll see how that pans out. Anyway, that rebounded 1.4% in February, beating expectations, recouping some of the drops that we saw back in January. Stocks then rallied on Wednesday, including a fresh record close for the S&P 500. An upward revision to consumer sentiment on Thursday helped the rally along. The markets were closed Friday. Of course, Good Friday. We were closed Good Friday as well. When the much-anticipated inflation report called the Personal Consumption Expenditure Index was released, which set up some volatility on Monday, which it did. Here we go. Getting a straightforward read on consumers this week or last week was challenging and continued this week. The Confidence Board, they call it, said that essentially consumers' confidence remains pretty much unchanged as it has for the past 6 months, showing consumers were generally pessimistic about the future. But then on Thursday, U of M consumer sentiment survey showed consumer confidence hit a 2.5-year high back in March. So it suggested that consumers had gained more confidence that inflation would drop and alleviate some pressure on household finances. I went to the grocery store with my wife this week, which I never go to the grocery store for like a full boat of groceries.
Mm-hmm.
But I painfully walked through Kroger East with her on, Tuesday night, in anticipation of this weekend. We're going to do cookouts and everything down at the lake. And my gosh, I mean, we bought batteries. We bought some cleaner for the bathrooms in addition to just regular food, burgers, stuff like that. And I could not believe how much it cost. Oh, my gosh. But anyway, it is what it is. Friday's PCE report may give some additional. That's this week. That's the Employment Situation Consumer Credit Report. Might give us some insight into consumer confidence. So what happened this week? Well, Wednesday, ADP employment report came out. Things were a little stronger than were anticipated, and then that gave the market some pause because then it's like, uh-oh, maybe things are hotter than we think right now. The Fed may or may not cut rates like the market assumes they will. Can you imagine that we came into this year expecting 6, maybe 7 rate cuts? We didn't expect that, but that's what the market felt like was going to happen. Well, here we are now in April. And everyone's like, oh, maybe in June. I don't think so. Maybe September. Maybe. I think we'll get one by the end of the year. That's my guess. All right. And finally, that's about it. I'm not going to talk about that anymore. You've heard enough of that from me. All right. So a couple other quick things I thought was interesting. USA Today, the amount of money Americans think they need to retire comfortably hits a record high. Jimmy gave me this piece. Inflation has crept into every part of Americans' life, including how much they now think they need to retire comfortably. A record 1.46 million in a study released on Tuesday said that's the number people think they need. That's a 53% surge since 2020 when folks thought they needed 951,000, 15% increase from last year's 1.27 million. The jump hasn't spurred Americans to save more, though. The average amount the U.S. adult has saved for retirement actually dropped modestly to $88,400 from $89,300 in 2023. But that is more than $10,000 off the five-week peak. The dip in savings brings the gap between what people think they need for retirement and what they've actually saved for retirement. Pretty big gap. Almost sounds like our budget deficit. 1.37 million. So that's the difference between what you've saved and what you think you need to save. So that magic number to retire comfortably has exploded to all-time highs. Of course, we have goals to hit, folks, if you're going to get there. Now, here's my opinion of that. Who cares how much money you have? How much income do you have? I told Glass this on Wednesday. You can't take growth to the grocery store and spend it. You've got to figure out a way to create guaranteed lifetime income, at least for those essentials. You have Social Security. Maybe you want some other guarantees. Make it that discretionary income that you want from the market stuff, maybe. That's not everybody, but some people fall into that camp. I also thought it was interesting the large gap between the different generations. Gen Z, millennials, Gen X, and boomers. So boomers, let's start with them. They predict they'll need about just under $1 million. Gen Xers, like me, think they need 1.56 million. Now here, I'm 54, a Gen Xer. I don't know. I've got a lot of buddies that are telling me that they need a lot more than that, and according to my calculations for them. But that's based on their lifestyle and the way they spend money like drunken sailors sometimes. Millennials, they think they need 1.65 million, and then Gen Zs, which I'm surprised they even know, they even have an opinion of this, but anyway, according to the survey, they think they need 1.63 million. So Gen Zs think more than millennials, which think more than Gen Xers, which think more than boomers. But here's the thing, like in this article, even high net wealth people still register a wide gap. Some of them think they need around $4 million, there we go, to fund the lifestyle and retirement, but they only have $175,000 saved. That's a pretty big gap, folks.
Yeah.
All right, and then finally, are your brackets all busted up? Of course, we have the whole, Final Four this weekend, Purdue's in there. We're going to play North Carolina State, Purdue will. And then we have UConn on the other side of the brackets. So hopefully that works out. So, Jimmy, our office pool, I'm down in the toilet somewhere.
I didn't even participate. I haven't watched this year, so I couldn't even wager a guess.
Guess who's at the top?
Did spouses get involved?
Oh, yeah.
Then I'm going to say Misty.
How'd you know that?
Because you made me guess, and then I thought, well, Misty would.
You read my mind. Telepathy. So, Ryan Belcher and Misty are neck and neck and neck. And if Purdue wins, she wins. If UConn wins, then Ryan wins. And I would say that if Purdue loses and UConn loses in the Final Four, which I don't think both of them will lose, then maybe it's a tie. So dinner on Misty this week. Maybe, maybe not.
All those groceries she bought at Kroger.
I don't think our pool's that big. It used to be, we used to stay in Indiana for entertainment purposes only. Fair. I don't know if it's even legal to throw in $10 anymore or not. But anyway, whatever. I think the Popo has bigger problems than worrying about my office pool. All right, and this is interesting. And then I'll leave you with this, and then we'll move on. The chances of picking a perfect bracket is 1 in 2 to the 67th power. Now, I'm into this kind of stuff, right? So that's 1 in 1.47 quintillion.
Sure.
Of course, that assumes each participant has a 50-50 chance of winning, which is probably not the case. But pretty interesting stuff, and that's why I don't think anyone, at least legitimately, has ever picked a perfect bracket. Now, I might be wrong, but I think you better go buy some Powerball tickets. Your chances to win a Powerball are a heck of a lot better than picking a perfect bracket.
I wonder how many people in Terre Haute might be winning big if the Sycamores win the NIT.
Yeah, tonight on Thursday night, man. I'll tell you what, I watched them the other night play. They are fun to watch.
They are.
And I feel so bad because they had such a great year, and they should have made the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. They barely got beat in their tournament championship game. What do you give credit for? A 3-day stint of tournament play or a full body of work? I just don't get that. I mean, I understand if you're in a big Power 5 conference, you know, you're going to get in no matter what. But, man, when you're in a conference like theirs, I hate that they didn't get in. But they're showing everyone that they were worthy, obviously, of being in the big dance. But they didn't shun the NIT. They're like, hey, let's go after it. I know a lot of the bigger schools, including Indiana, said, you know what? We need to focus on recruiting and retaining our current talent. I don't think we can really get out there and play. And I get that. I understand that. But I also remember Bob Knight playing in 2 NITs and winning one of them, maybe 2 of them, one of them. And then 2-3 years later, we were in the national championship game, 81, and then getting an 87.
Yep.
And we won it. So I think playing in tournament play, especially for young players. But listen, I don't get paid to coach. I don't even get paid to do radio. I'm just here.
We're just having here,
fun.
Man.
All right, it's the question and answer show. When we come back, we're going to dig right in all kinds of great questions. And if you ever have a question you want to ask us, go to cfci.us. Contact us. It goes straight to Jim Emmon Jr. We'll answer it. We may include it on the show. So here we go. We're going to kick it off. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. The energy is high here in the room. Jim Emmon Jr. is with me, and we are excited to bring you the question and answer show. So, you know, years ago, we did this every month. We do one big Q&A, kind of got away from doing that, then started doing question and answer segments for a while, then kind of came back to the Q&A show. And honestly, because of popularity, people are like, love the variety, love this, love that. Just keep coming back with them. We're like, cool. So it's kind of fun. We sit in our advisor meetings. Hey, what questions did you guys have this week? What did you have today? Because literally every single day, there are questions that come up in our everyday practice that we're like, wow, what a great question. And, you know, and I don't always know the answer to them, but I certainly know where to go look. And that was the case with many of these this go around. So, Jimmy, let's knock it off.
All righty. First one is, what income is included in determining if you are eligible to make a Roth IRA contribution?
That is a fantastic question because, you know, if you make over a certain amount of money, then you can't make a Roth contribution. Now, you may be able to do a backdoor Roth, right, make a non-deductible contribution and quickly convert it to Roth because anybody, regardless of income, can make a non-deductible IRA contribution. But what income's included? Obviously, regular income, you know, welcome to Walmart, may I help you, whatever it might be. That's income. But then what else is considered income for the ability to make a Roth contribution? Well, capital gains. That's another one. Even like tax-free interest on bonds. It's kind of like Social Security in a way. But what's not included, and this is more the emphasis here, Roth conversions. They do not count towards your income eligibility to make a Roth. So I could make $1 million Roth conversion and maybe make 150 grand and still be fully eligible to make a Roth IRA contribution for me and my spouse as well. So, yeah, that's a great question.
Next one is, and I don't know the exact circumstances here, two 50-year-olds that have about $1.3 million in Roth IRAs. So with the combination of contributions and conversions and everything, how do they get money out without paying any tax or penalty?
Well, that's a good one, because I actually knew the answer to this, but I got my technical consultants on the email and said, hey, can you guys clear this up for me just for a second? They're like, yeah. Well, I mean, here's the thing. In any tax year, contributions come out first without any tax or penalty. So if I make a contribution to a Roth and then next year I say, I need that money back, it's no problem. It's the gain you have to worry about. Now, converted funds are a little trickier. They're always distributed tax-free, but if you're under the age of 59 and a half, the 10% penalty will apply if it's been less than 5 years since the conversion. So let's say I'm 50 and I make a conversion. I need to wait 5 years and I can take the converted amount out, no problem. But here's the other thing. Each conversion has its own 5-year period. So really focus on this. Contributions come out first. Conversions come out second, but that has a 5-year wait before I can take the converted amount out. Gains, 5 years and 59 and a half before those are penalty free. But the order of which money comes out of a Roth is contributions, conversions, then gains. So with people with $1 million or whatever, that's incredible, by the way. You must have been listening to the show for a long time to contribute that much or convert that much to Roth. You're probably in pretty good shape. Now, how do you keep track of all this? Well, to me, it's pretty easy to track your contributions. I think it's pretty easy to track your conversions. And then everything else is gains. So just keep track of it, maybe in a little spreadsheet or something. So then if you ever get called out on it, which I doubt you will, but if you ever did, you'd have some proof to back it up.
So tax day is next Monday. And
is it
a lot
really?
Of people are
next
calling
Monday?
Just next
Monday?
No. You're
the Monday after next.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Don't want to throw everybody
freaked
in
out for a second, Jim.
I was like, everything's on the eclipse. That's where my mind is.
All right,
so
all right.
We got about 10 days or so.
Good.
The question is, what is a donor-advised fund, and is it something you recommend? And I know this is part of that whole tax benefit concept.
Yeah. You know, I mean, here's the thing. Like, let me talk about this for just a second. Donor-advised fund is you set up a – it's kind of like – It's a fund you set up, you put money in, and you get a tax deduction because it's going into a fund that will be given to charity. So you get the deduction for it going in. Then when you want to spread out the love, you just say, send $1,000 here, send $2,000 there, whatever you might want to do, send it around. I'm going to come back to my theory about donor advised funds in just a second. Great idea. Personally, don't have one yet. Plan to set one up. Lots of clients have them. They love them. They can put money away, get deductions, decide later on how to distribute the money. Now, the reason I'll tell you that a lot of people sometimes put too much money in, they forget that once you get 70 and a half, you can treat your IRA like a donor advised fund. I not only get to take the money out tax-free, but it also goes towards satisfying any minimum distributions whenever that time comes. 70 and a half called a qualified charitable distribution. So a lot of times people get a bunch of money caught up in these and they're like, oh, wow, I'd rather give it from my IRA. Duh, exactly right. So let's go back to the donor advised fund. Yes, I recommend it for many people. And my thoughts are that it actually creates more generosity. Why is that? Because mentally, I've already given the money away. So once I've put 20 grand in a donor advised fund, it's gone. It's going to charity. So when someone says, hey, would you like to sponsor a golf outing? Would you like to sponsor my dance? Would you like to do this or that or the other? It's like, yeah, why not? The money's already been given. I think personally, from my experience, is makes no sense, but mentally, people have already given it away. So my thought is donor advised funds actually create more generosity by just having it available.
And last one here before the break, talking about gift taxes.
Yep.
This is kind of a nice gift. I gave my house to my son,
yep.
and it was worth about $220,000. The parent paid $130,000 for it. So, does the parent need to file anything with the IRS? Will the son owe any tax on the gift since it was over the $17,000-ish dollars? I think I can give without filing anything.
Okay, great question. So, I know people are sitting there waiting for this answer, and here's the answer. The answer is there is no tax due by the parent or the kid. Why? Because we have like a $12 million lifetime gift exclusion amount available to us right now. So if I gave away more than $17,000, which she did, then I just need to let the IRS know I did that, and it goes against my $12 million. So there's a gift tax return that I fill out that says, here's what I gave. Here was the $17,000 excluded amount. Here's the other amount, the remaining amount. In this case, it's called $100,000, and that's going against my $12 million. And now I have $11,900,000 left to give. And I sign it and send it in. And that's just recording it with the IRS and said, hey, I did give away more than the annual exclusion amount, but it's no big deal. I would file the gift tax return. I think it's the right thing to do. Not everyone does it. A lot of folks give their house away for a dollar or whatever. But yeah, just figure that out. Send in the form. It makes you feel better about yourself by doing the right thing. All right, Jimmy, let's take a break.
All righty, sir.
When we come back, more questions, a lot more answers. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Question and answer show. If you have a question, please go to CFCI. Charlie Fink. CharlieIgloo.us and contact us. Jim will be the recipient of that email. Any question you have, I don't care. Throw out anything you want. It can be about fishing. It can be about finances. It can be about relationships. About mushroom honey. Whatever you want.
I was
going
to say mushroom honey would be a good one.
That'd
right
be
now.
A good one this time of year.
Yes, it would.
Jim, you had a question for me or a comment.
Well, you've talked over the years about a situation that impacted your family. Your grandmother had a home out on the west side of Bloomington.
439 Harvey Drive.
Yep, right up the street from my grandparents' place. And then she passed that on. I forget the exact situation here. Did she pass it on to one daughter out of the four? Or how did that work? Because I'm thinking of that question we had before the break of giving the house to the son.
Yeah. So when people say, I want to give my house to my son or my daughter, I want to put their name on my account, I'm always asking, why do you want to do that? Well, you know, because of this, that, and the other. But it doesn't matter. Here's what happened with Grandma. So Grandma decided she was going to go into, it was just an apartment, something much smaller. So she decided to give the house to my mom and her three sisters. Well, Grandma and Grandpa paid like $20,000 for this house back in like 1960 or something in Highland Village. So when they gave the house away, it was worth like $120,000. So when my grandma gave the house to the girls, then they all also were given her cost basis. So let's keep the math simple. Let's say they gave $30,000 and it's worth $130,000. So now it's $100,000 of gain. Well, then my aunt Nina, who still lives there, said, I'd like to buy the house. So she bought it from all the girls, her sisters. Well, guess what? All the sisters had to pay tax because they were given Grandma's cost basis. What would have been the appropriate way to handle that? Grandma should have said, oh, Nina, you want the house? Here, I'm going to sell it to Nina. Grandma wouldn't have paid any tax. Then she could have turned around and gave the money away to all the girls, and no one would have paid a tax. So anytime you want to do something, just stop, tap the brakes, think about it for a second. There might be a little better way to wiggle through that situation.
All right. Next question is, what is the process when a trust or an estate is listed as an IRA beneficiary?
Oh, man, that's a
that seems a little meaty.
Yeah, it's a little bit meaty. Who asked that question?
I don't know. Was on your list, actually, but I don't know if it was one
on
of your
my
clients
list?
Or...
Okay, well... I mean, it's kind of complicated, and I don't even know if I want to waste time on this, but let me just give you a quick couple quickies. So it depends, right? If the beneficiary is very well identified in the trust, then essentially it becomes a trust-owned inherited IRA, and pretty much the same rules apply as that if you gave it to them directly, where they have to have it out in 10 years or have to pay minimum distributions. But if that's not the case, then there's a different rule that you have to follow. And it's basically like a 5-year rule. The money has to be out. Now, the question is, how is it taxed? Is it taxed at the beneficiary's level, or is it taxed as a trust? We don't want it taxed as a trust because the rates are much higher, deductions are much lower. You want it taxed at the beneficiary level. So typically what happens if it is left to a trust and maybe there's multiple places the money goes, they'll typically do a trust return, and then they will distribute the money out to the beneficiaries and then send them a K-1 saying, hey, you know, you took this money out of the trust. So I'm not going to get into that too much deeper than that, because that is more than sticker bushes for me. It's more than weeds, Jimmy, okay. In other words. Sorry I put that on there.
That's all good. Next one is, I'm 73 this year. I'm retiring this summer, so mm-hmm. I want to know if I can delay my RMD, my required minimum distribution, until next year, or do I need to take it by the end of 2024?
Yeah, you sure can delay it. Now, just keep in mind, you can delay it until April of next year, which a lot of people do. So let's say you worked 6 months, right, and now you have to take a $10,000, $20,000 required distribution. You're like, I really don't want that income this year. I'll take it next year when I'm just on Social Security. Yeah, you can do that. Punch it to April. But then keep in mind, you're going to have to take two next year. You'll have to take this year's and next year's. Now, a couple of the other things that I always say to people, though, I wouldn't just kick it down the road. It might make sense for you to take it, because remember, what does RMD stand for? Required minimum distribution. But as Ed Slott and I talked about on the show not too many months ago, what about making it stand for required maximum distribution? In other words, what's the maximum distribution I should take to be in that maybe 12% bracket, 22, 24 bracket? If I'm leaving money on the table, take it. So moving it to next year may or may not be a good idea. I don't know. But then forecast out, what do my RMDs look like next year, the next year, the next year, and the next year? You may put yourself in a situation by not taking not just the RMD, but your maximum required distribution. It's not even required, but maximum distribution instead of a minimum. Now, I was thinking about this because my dad, you know, has been still working in the bank. He's 76. We did go to part-time. And, you know, he's kind of thinking about hanging it up altogether at some point. I mean, you know, we've talked about it every December on this radio show for the last many, many years. So he hasn't had to take a required distribution from the bank 401k, but he has to take it from his IRAs because of that still working exception. So don't forget that if you're still working somewhere and money's in a 401k, you do not have to take an RMD from those funds. And in fact, some people will roll money into their plan, not out of their plan, but into their plan to avoid taking an RMD. Again, is it a good idea? I don't know. Every situation is different.
What's the still working stipulation? Do you have to be working part-time, full-time, a certain number of months? Are there any criteria at all?
Yeah, there's not. You don't have to be full-time. I mean, you can be been part-time. So yeah, as long as you're still working
in some capacity,
for that employer that has the plan.
Okay.
That's a great question.
Makes sense. You want to take a break before we get to this next round?
Yeah, we've been going a little bit long. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, oh my gosh, a bunch
Some
of questions.
IRA questions.
All right, here we go. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes, and Jim Emmon Jr. is here along my side. We've been talking Eclipse. We've been talking RMDs. We've been talking about gift taxes, all kinds of stuff. If you miss any of the show, you can always listen to it on Saturday morning, which is a very popular time as people are heading to the farmer's market. And then, obviously, WGCLradio.com. On Thursday night after the show, it ends up in the wild world of podcasts somehow, some way. So wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, you can listen to the show as well. All right, Jimmy.
And hey, if you do not have your Eclipse glasses, we've got a handful or some still at the office. So if you're listening, come by Friday, 8 to 4, if you need to pick up some and say hello.
They're red and white stripes.
They came from Visit Bloomington. Yeah,
okay.
I got a friend up there, and she hooked me up with some, so they're legit. There was all this discussion of glasses that were fakes and wouldn't protect your eyes and everything. These are the legit ones, so they're free. Come on by. A couple questions here on IRA. So my last remaining parent, my mother, passed away back in May of 2017. My younger brother and I inherited her IRA, and it was equally split into inherited IRA accounts. Mm-hmm. We were of the understanding we could handle required minimum distributions, which we were just talking about before the break, via the, quote, stretch IRA method, which is RMD stretched or spread out over our expected lifetime.
Right.
The new laws, however, that went into place in 2020 and 2022 have us wondering if we must change what we are doing. So can you help us with this question?
Yeah, it's a really easy one. I mean, thankfully, we live in the world of grandfathering. So Yeah, you don't have to worry about it. You can keep doing what you're doing. The changes that were made by the SECURE Act apply only to those beneficiaries who died after 2019. So since mom died in 2017, you and your brother, you can continue to do what you're doing, stretching those minimum distributions out under the current rules or under the rules that were before the SECURE Act. But once again, I'm going to come back to you and say this. Listen, if you just take a minimum distribution, I mean, that tax bill, I mean, obviously you can stretch it for a really long time. But keep your eye on where you're at tax-wise. Are you in a situation where you could take more out than the minimum distribution and still make sense tax-wise? Maybe you could use it to pay off your house, a car, a student loan, something like that. So once again, I mean, let's quit getting so caught up on these required minimum distributions and let's think about it from what's the maximum I should be taking out as a distribution.
Question here about an inherited traditional IRA. The definition of a, quote, eligible designated beneficiary, or EDB, includes any individual who is not more than 10 years younger than the IRA owner. So what about a person who is older than the original owner? Is such a person an eligible designated beneficiary?
All right, man. These are some deepies. All right, so here we go. Let me think this through just for a second. So, okay, number one, you are correct that one of the ways to qualify as an eligible designated beneficiary, EDB, is to not be more than 10 years younger than the IRA owner. So this also includes anyone who is older than the IRA owner. Consider it this way. Subtract 10 years from your age, and anyone in the world who is that age or older would qualify as an eligible designated beneficiary on your IRA. Simple math, subtract 10 years from your age. Anyone, let me say this again, anyone in the world, not just your brother, your sister, your kid, whatever, aunt, uncle, whatever, anyone in the world who is that age or older would qualify as an EDB under your IRA.
Okay. Another question here. We have somebody who is under the age of 59 and a half who has a small traditional IRA. She wants to cash it in and use the money for college expenses for her daughter.
Yep.
Now, we've talked about this in the office and staff meetings and whatnot. If we recall correctly, they can use this without a 10% penalty, but is there a limit on the amount that mom can take penalty-free to use for college?
Yeah, that's a good question, because we have these thoughts like, okay, $10,000 for a new home purchase or whatever those, you know, there's always these limits. But yeah, there's actually no limit to the amount of funds that can be taken penalty-free to pay for higher education. So if you're going to NYU versus Ole Miss, which is about a $100,000 swing or something, it doesn't matter. So there's no limit on the amount of funds you can use penalty-free. The funds can be used for, they have to be used for tuition, room and board, and other expenses that are required by the school. So not just things you'd like to have, but things that are required by the school. So if the school requires you to buy a laptop, yep, you're good. They require you to, you know, wear suspenders, then yep, they're good, whatever it might be. Keep in mind that the 10% penalty would not apply to any pre-tax funds coming out of the IRA. These funds would still be taxable.
We got another question. We're not going to do it today, but came up in our advisor meeting yesterday that Angela was talking about with 529s and whatnot. We'll get more into that next month when we do the next Q&A.
So, are you talking about how I'm rolling money from my 529 to Roth?
Yeah. I didn't get a chance to do the good research to answer
today.
Well,
I'll just give you a quick one, but I mean, there's a lot to this. So what we know is this, is that the plan has to be open for 15 years with the same beneficiary. Then that beneficiary can roll money into a Roth IRA up to their annual limit. So if they made a bunch of money, they could put their full $6,000 or $7,000 in, whatever, then they can do that, and up to the $35,000. What we're finding interesting is a little box on the form for the Indiana plan that says that this plan had to be open for 15 years. So does that mean that if I would have rolled an old plan from another state into this plan and maybe it wasn't around for 15 years? Literally, that's the way it reads, that the Indiana plan, this plan, must have been open 15 years with this beneficiary. And it also says that the money that gets rolled into the Roth is subject to the recapture of the tax credits. And that's why Jim wanted to boot this to the next time, because there's a lot more to this. So if I'm you, hang on, hang tight. There's always more clarification to come when we have new rules like this.
And one final question before the next break here. I have a Coverdell ESA account, actually multiple of those for five.
What's that stand for, Jim?
You would have asked educational savings account.
You got it.
Thank you. It took me a quick second. For five grandkids.
You guessed Misty was winning our pool.
I might have
certainly
cheated.
Win this one.
My question is whether Coverdell ESAs can be treated the same as 529 plans under the new law when it comes to unused funds being eligible to roll over to Roth IRA.
Yeah, the answer is no. The Secure Act 2 only covered the 529 to Roth, not the educational savings accounts. So, but you can do a 60-day rollover or direct transfer of a Coverdell, we don't use these anymore, account to a 529 plan, and then roll any unused over to a Roth IRA. Once again, another backdoor method of getting money into a Roth. So let me walk you through this. It is allowable for you to take a Coverdell ESA account, roll it into a 529 plan, 60-day rollover, and then roll any unused funds into a Roth IRA. Of course, assuming you meet all the requirements for that 529 to Roth IRA rollover. But once again, I would hang tight. There's more clarification to come.
All right. You want to take a break?
Yep. Absolutely. I'm wore out. We're going to take a break. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone.
I never know if I'm supposed to jump in
or not. No, it's okay. I was thinking about something I said in a meeting this week where the lady says to me, literally, she says, I cannot believe you just said that. I've been known to say a few outrageous things, as you know, that I don't have a filter. They just kind of blurt out. I'm going to tell you off the air, you're going to absolutely die laughing. I don't even know these people that well. And I'm like, she's like, I can't believe you said that. I go, oh, I'm sorry. Did I offend you? And she goes, no, you can't offend me. I've got a high shock factor. I go, okay, good.
Sometimes that's the best way to get to know people, though.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Well, anyway, she got to know me. All right, Jimmy's question and answer show. We've got time for a few more.
All righty here. So this one actually came from Doug Hughes, and I believe one of his clients.
Pretty much everybody.
Yeah, a lot of people. Gold continues to rise. Is this something that I need to look into for my investment portfolio?
Well, here's the you're right. On April 1st, the price of gold hit a record high. I think reaching like almost $2,300 an ounce. I mean, so the answer is yeah. I mean, right? I mean, I think everybody should consider commodities, precious metals. I mean, it's just another asset class. You know, should you own it in physical form where I have it in my safe or a safe deposit box, or do I own it in some structure like an exchange traded fund? I mean, that's totally up to you. Or maybe you own a mutual fund that owns gold. We had Julian on from First Eagle Global, I don't know, a month ago, and you know, they have a pretty substantial holding of gold in their First Eagle Global fund. So yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to own it, but keep in mind, I mean, gold, I think there's a lot going on right now. I think in the world there's becoming less confidence in the U.S. Treasury and the Treasury notes, and you're seeing less demand out of China, you're seeing less demand out of Japan and India, places like that. And they're buying more gold. So there's a bunch of people stockpiling on gold. And gold is largely driven by supply and demand. Since there's a finite resource, we think, when demand's up, price tends to follow. It's been a tool to counter inflation for years and years and years. So gold is a pretty misunderstood investment. I mean, it has endured as a valuable asset throughout history. I mean, we used to be pegged to gold or dollar. We went off the gold standard back, I think, in the 40s. Kind of inflated our way out of some debt, repaid, I believe, some European countries with dollars, not gold. They were pedoed at us for that. We went back on the gold standard temporarily. I think Nixon era is when we came off the gold standard for good. And we have a fiat currency, you know, system. So, which basically stands for I believe it's worth something if you say it's worth something. So that's kind of where we're at. So I think in the world, there's just a little bit of that wariness going on. So that's part of it. Geopolitical risk, that's the reason why gold probably has a value in every nation of the world. It is taken, it can be taken in any country and purchase or be exchanged into currency at any country. It can provide a hedge against extreme outcomes as well. So what's unknown is if gold will cap out at a certain point, and it probably won't. I mean, at some point, I don't know that we'll ever really cap out. It's kind of like, you know, if you think about any asset that you own, you hope that it continues over time to increase in value. It won't increase every year, but over time, if you look at a trend, that's what you hope. So as an investor, you could potentially capitalize on future price increases or lose out as the price drops at some point, and it will. And, you know, here we are in an election year. There's always uncertainty during election time, and I think that might have a little bit to do with it. And I don't know for sure. What I do know is that it is a commodity. It is not a currency. Even though it can be exchanged for goods and services, a lot of people would do that. It is a commodity. It's just kind of, in my opinion, kind of like crypto. Like crypto, what's it worth? Well, it's what everyone else thinks it's worth, because I don't know that it's backed by anything except scarcity. So you have a lot of comparisons there with crypto and gold and silver and all the different commodities out there. But I think it's driven a lot by supply and demand, scarcity, but then also the value of the dollar. I mean, typically when the value of the dollar weakens, these kind of commodities will go up in value, just any commodity does. When the dollar strengthens, they tend to come back in value a little bit. But then that can be counteracted by some of the things that I just mentioned. So it is a very complicated thing. Do I own a little bit of gold? Sure. I've had some gold for years. Is it a major portion of what I own? No. Real estate's my main hedge against against inflation and all these other aspects. But I think it's good to own a little bit of everything. I mean, you never know what disaster may come upon the land, folks, so you need to divide your assets 7, maybe even 8 ways. That's my post-Easter preaching session right there, Jimmy.
Take a break and wrap it up?
Sure, let's do it. We'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. We will talk more about sector performance in presidential election years, maybe next week. In 2 weeks, Jimmy, we have Mary Beth Franklin.
We do.
On. I'm super excited. Mary Beth had a skiing accident last time on a Facebook post. She was in a little things they bring them down the mountain in, but she's fine, and she's fired up and ready to come on the show next in 2 weeks. Next week we'll have a variety of things to talk about as well. Of course, the big one will be, what were you doing on Monday when the eclipse happened, mm-hmm. and what did you think about it? Because this is pretty, I mean, you know, I don't get wrapped up in things. I don't get too starstruck about things. But this is pretty cool, honestly. I'm kind of jacked up about it.
I would not travel for this, but since it's happening literally right above our heads, you got to take advantage of it. And the next one's not for 20 years.
Yeah.
So who knows if we'll be around for that.
And what path will that take in 20 years?
Correct.
I think this is probably a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Yeah. So I was listening to the mayor talk. Yeah, Mayor Carrie. Well, you were there with me, and she said, you know what, we may have a lot of people come to Bloomington. And just be nice to them. Show them the hospitality of Bloomington, to the hospitality of Monroe County. Don't get irritated, honk and yell and cuss and throw them fingers and stuff. Welcome them. Welcome them, because we want them to come back. We want them to enjoy our city, because we have a great city. We have a great place to visit, a great place to live, a great place to raise a family. Do we have a little bit of hair on the pickle, as they say?
Everybody does.
We have a great place, and we need to showcase that as we have guests from... Who knows? I mean, I talked to Bob Burks out at Bloomington Airport, and I have not talked to Rex Hinkle yet, but I probably should. And I think last time they had 30 to 40 airplanes coming in.
Wow.
So they have pretty good contingency coming into the airport.
Heard several of the local campsites are maxed out.
Yeah.
And with the weather kind of up in the air to see what's going to happen, Bloomington's looking pretty good as of Thursday evening, so there may be a lot of people who say, hey, we're going to Hoosier Country.
There we go, guys. We're leaving you for the next break, the long break. We'll talk to you next week, everyone. Have a great one, everyone. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.